Much. I'm very grateful to be part of this very interesting conversation. And thank you to ISD and Philip and the team. I'm going to approach this idea of the South African Truth Commission as being a trendsetter with a lot of questions, because this year is the 20th anniversary of our democracy. Today, our fourth post-1994 Parliament is concluding its final session. We are taking leave of some of the people who have been in our Parliament for these 20 years, who have been the real anchors of democracy. We are sitting in a place where we're very concerned about the unraveling of our democracy, and I want to reflect on the Truth Commission from that perspective. When we moved into the negotiation of a truth commission, it was actually the final clause of the interim constitution that established the principles that would govern the transition. And it was really focused on amnesty. And that focus has come back to haunt us very badly. Kulumani, which is this national movement of victims in South Africa, started before the commencement of the Truth Commission, because the experience was that church leaders and political leaders were negotiating a process without very active involvement and consultation with victims. And so it was a group of women who decided, this is not on. If we don't claim our voices, we will never have any impact on this process, and we're being taken for granted as people who'd be willing to be the victim's voice in the commission. And I think that practice came out of this long history from around 1983, when the United Democratic Front was formed, and the growing strength of this largely nonviolent process of claiming people's power. Something that really threatened the first post-apartheid government, but it's something that we actually need to reclaim, and Kulumani is part of this movement to reclaim people's power, because we no longer have a situation of people's power, and so the hopes that were raised by the TRC have been vanquished. The people are not governing in the present in South Africa. And so TRCs ideally are about opening space for different voices and devolving power to citizens. Well, that was our understanding. And I think we did have that creation of a structural opening in the state. There were new opportunities for exploring what had gone on in the inner workings of the state to some extent. There was the participation of the most disenfranchised, the people who we have a history of 350 years of colonialism and dispossession, and embracing the work of memory to advance learning and accountability. And we really believed there were new possibilities of civic participation in the process. A little bit about Kulumani. The mandate of the Truth Commission in South Africa was limited to only four categories of gross human rights violations, and that was, the acronym was CATS. It was killings, abductions, torture, and severe ill treatment. And this is one of our, we built a very big database, because the Truth Commission closed for victims after 18 months. It's very important to look at the fact that the Marikana Commission of Inquiry into the Marikana Massacre is now in its 17th month of operation, having used a massive budget for a massacre involving 34 striking mine workers and 10 other citizens. And so the comparisons are very extreme, and it's something that comes home to haunt victims of the apartheid atrocities. You know, the discrepancies between, the Truth Commission functioned for the period 1960 to 1994 compared to this individual massacre. We've been very involved with the widows of the Marikana massacre, because we learned from our Truth Commission how women's voices and visibility were rendered invisible. Their voices were only there as speaking on behalf of what happened to family members. And so we decided to get actively involved in preventing that being repeated at this commission. And I think to some extent the group of widows has become incredibly strong. They stand up and they address crowds of 15,000, just something that was unheard of at the time. Women victims of apartheid atrocities were sitting before the Truth Commission. Just to pick up on the issues raised about disappearances, we're sitting with a huge backlog of unaddressed disappearances. We have a database of 6,800 people who disappeared. The special unit that was set up when the Truth Commission closed, called the Missing Persons Task Team, it has managed to solve the cases of 90 people who disappeared. So, and they feel that they have no obligation to sort out this huge amount of people who disappeared. And it's a very big task facing us. We believe that we have to continue this journey until every issue that hasn't been resolved is to some extent settled as far as possible. Okay, so a little bit about where we've positioned ourselves as Kolumani. We decided to resist the TRC notion of victimhood. We rejected former President Mbeki's dismissive approach and contemptuous labels of victims. And I think you'll see how our subsequent presidents have had very serious influence on how the issues of the TRC have been taken forward. And it's something that I hope that we might be able to research or explore together, because what is often not talked about is the fact that Mandela was a prisoner for the 27 years he spent in jail, and President Mbeki was in exile and he trained as an economist. And President Mbeki felt, he was a supreme sort of technocrat. He felt he knew the answers for everybody, and he believed that the struggle was won by the people who were in exile and who became military combatants. And so there was this huge gap that emerged between the people who carried the struggle every day and got killed and abducted and tortured, and the people who were in exile, who feel that they made the biggest contribution, and we face this struggle all the time. All sorts of special benefits have been put in place for those people, and President Mbeki told those people never to claim that they were victims, and so most of them didn't go to the TRC, and subsequently various sort of systems of special benefits have been set up for them, whereas the victims who were fighting apartheid in the country every day have yet to receive any kind of reparation. And so Kolumani started, at the time the constitution was adopted, and people got together and we started, there was, you know, Bill of Rights, Chapter 2 of our constitution, 27 different rights, and we wondered to what extent people actually framed what had happened to them in terms of this Bill of Rights. And so it's been a very organic movement of people wanting to tell their stories, because only a few got an opportunity at the Truth Commission. And so groups would meet all over the country, and then we decided to ask people, well, what violation did you suffer? And we gave people lists of the 27 bill rights in the Bill of Rights, and that was a very interesting process of ordinary people who'd never had a language of human rights, trying to make sense of which of those rights they could claim they had been violated beyond just the few, the four that the Truth Commission established. And I think it really became something that, to a significant extent, internalized an understanding of human rights, which is a very difficult concept for most victims. Most victims in South Africa have had no opportunities. They have mostly, our membership hasn't finished school. The majority are unemployed still. Some people, few people, get social grants if they you know, if they fit certain categories, but it's a community that has gone backwards very severely. And so that became the beginning of a lot of advocacy. And so when we look back, in our analysis of the South African Truth Commission, we feel, as was raised here, that there was only a partial truth, that the truth is being constructed as we go forward. We run processes in communities of narrative and art and narratives, and we are putting together the most extraordinary archive of people's work on film and for exhibition. There was a failure of justice. The transition secured positions and benefits for the pre- and the post-apartheid elite, and we struggle with the continuing practices of secrecy. It was incomplete, inadequate, and delayed reparations, and we call this the unfinished business. That is our main focus. And, of course, the transformation was incomplete. 25 million people are in desperate poverty. Their voices do not count. We call this a bifurcated democracy where the Constitution works for half the population only. And so I thought I'd just, people find using art and storytelling and singing and all those tools incredibly helpful in expressing what is inside them. And this is just an image of what people aspire to in reconciliation. This is still a dream. White people have not grasped their contribution to the dispossession of the black people of our country. The demands of victims are very simple: to recognize all victims that meet the TRC criteria. We accepted that was the negotiated framework. We do not want any policies constructed or adopted without victim participation. That continues. We would like a central repository of data and information. We would love our archive of 85,000 stories to become part of the national heritage. And we would like the TRC recommendations on reparations to be implemented. And so you'll see a lot of our groups produce their own T-shirts. This is one of the slogans they chose, called "No Reconciliation Without Truth, Reparation and Redress." And so, as was mentioned earlier, South Africa represents a case study of reconciliation without justice. For reconciliation to be achieved and to become durable, victims must experience truth and justice, and redress measures must be adequate. We haven't fulfilled any of those three components. In 2012, in December, we managed to have the largest representation of cabinet ministers and deputy ministers attend a gathering that we organized called a National Dialogue on Redress. And Commissioner Hlengiwe Mkhize, who chaired the Committee on Reparations and Rehabilitation, made the following statements. She said, "We are back to where we started, but I hesitate to present this as a failed project. The TRC helped us to get an understanding. When members of Parliament debated the Mbeki proposals on reparations," these were new proposals that he commissioned from a consultant that reduced the reparations packages to a quarter of what the TRC had recommended. And then she went on to say, "They were conservative and mean. They failed to take account of the human dignity mandate, and we didn't get the envisaged reparations office in the presidency. We thought," she was a commissioner, "we were giving you a different South Africa." And then she went on to just highlight the gaps and what she feels is needed. We call these gatherings circles of dialogue in Ndabas. She said there's a need for more and more in Ndabas. problem with Indabas is that people are still spatially separated. So it's very, very difficult to get the spectrum of this society together in one circle. People are aging in shame and disgrace. This is about human suffering. Locating this responsibility in the Department of Justice did not achieve satisfaction. There are many more things that we can do. We need a movement that builds accountability. The concept of reparations did not go far enough. I'm happy that you are keeping the agenda alive. We need a way of finishing the business of the TRC. Now, Hlengiwe Mkhize is presently the Deputy Minister of Economic Development, and we've made many arguments that reparations is a crucial component of economic development for people who've been left worse off than ever. And when I asked her, she communicates with me, and I asked her if she was willing to raise these issues in the cabinet. And after making these statements to the gathering, and she said, well, actually, that would be very difficult. So there's a huge challenge we have. In summary, what we've learned is that in the transitional justice framework, victims are expected to make sacrifices. They made sacrifices in the struggle. Nothing has changed. And we don't agree with this idea that they are always the people to accept the sacrifices. Transitional justice is mainly driven by states and by elites through top-down processes with an eye on the international community. There is civil society involvement and not much victim involvement in the planning and implementation, and victims are still viewed largely as passive objects despite other rhetoric. And so I want to just turn to the questions that we're wrestling with now, and that is, did we squander these opportunities to build the society we imagined we were building, or were they stolen from us? And one of our emeritus economists, Professor Sampita Blanche, calls it that we became lost in transformation. We had this brief golden period under Nelson Mandela, and then we moved into the capturing of the transition through a focus on black elite formation with the purpose of de-racializing the class of the wealthy with a preference given to the interests of local and foreign corporations. That has continued, and it's got worse. I mean, the police responded to the fact that the corporations were threatened by the striking mine workers, and that led to the massacre. And this was called, people understand it, that Mbeki set out to de-racialize the class of the wealthy. He saw that as a model of patriotism. Then we moved to Zuma, and Zuma really represents for us an era of paternalistic cronyism. We see him regarding himself as a father figure who can dispense benefits to good and worthy children, doesn't include the victims of the apartheid atrocities. And so we live now with a coexistence of excessive wealth and hopeless poverty in the context of an inefficient and corrupt political system and a powerful and self-centered economic system which prevents fair governance. And so when we have gatherings of victims, the question always becomes, who betrayed us? Where were we sold out? Was it at the Congress for a Democratic South Africa? And we finally discovered the answer earlier this year through Professor Sampita Blanche, who spoke about the meetings that happened on the sidelines of CADESA, meetings with basically foreign multinationals that took place at our development bank at night after the political negotiations had happened in the day. And corporations negotiated to retain their dominance in relation to the new political authority, and the new political elite sacrificed the interests of the majority in that process, and that has led us down a path of even worse problems that existed at the end of apartheid. So, what is missing? I think, as was mentioned earlier, greater knowledge, and it resonates with what the Canadian Indigenous people speak of, is very poor knowledge and understanding of the systemic injustice inherent in the South African system, especially for the last 100 years, which is from the discovery of diamonds and gold. And it has created an intensification of these triple challenges: poverty, unemployment, and inequality. There's a need for a program of white adult education to understand the systemic nature of the exploitation that has taken place, and so that they can come on board to make sacrifices in the service of the promotion of social stability and systemic justice in the long run. Otherwise, we have an incredibly fragile democracy. And the kind of white perspective that we welcome is one from Jaco Barnard Nordier, who is a law professor at the University of Cape Town. And he wrote, "My responsibility to the face of the other must be that where I have visited wrong upon the other, I'm obliged to attempt a reparation of the wrong." And giving back in no way amounts simply to handouts. I'll just quickly go through about 4 more slides. There's a real need to deal with our collective trauma. Pumla Gobodo Madikizela, the writer of The Human Being Died That Night, says that if you don't deal with it, you act it out. You can work through it or act it out. We see this collective trauma playing out in townships every single day. There's a repertoire of violence, which is the only way people are seeing the state take notice. This is happening 3 of these every single day. It's an absolute epidemic of community violence. Alex Moraine, the deputy chair of our Truth Commission, has just published his book, What's Gone Wrong? We're on the Brink of a Failed State. Max Dupree, who ran the special report summarizing the Truth Commission hearings every week, contests that, but I actually don't think his arguments stand. Archbishop Tutu is also saying, "I often weep at the state of the country." So we have really significant weaknesses in our democracy. People aren't able to hold institutions accountable, and people do not have reasonable access to equal opportunities. So yes, there is. We are on a search for a truly post-apartheid South Africa. And we hope that the Marikana massacre would serve as a wake-up call. We're not sure that it will. So I wanted to say perhaps we need to start setting a new trend and join the Anna Wim, the subaltern, using these different values that were highlighted yesterday by the Canadian Truth Commissioners, and rebuilding the agency of ordinary citizens, which is where we focus all our energy. So I just want to thank you.